some drivers are born to win.
Oscar Piastri has done the job brilliantly. The Australian driver will see the checkered flag first. Oscar Piastri wins the sprint to take McLaren to the top step once again.
I want to beat everybody. I'm here because I want to try and win.
The rookie wasn't afraid to go wheel to wheel with the most experienced drivers on the grid.
I've crashed with Lewis a couple of times, and I feel like both of them weren't particularly my fault. In Monza, he came up to me straight away and shook my hand and said sorry, which, you know, you don't get from everyone on the grid. Mark actually said to me after Monza, if he didn't think much of you, he wouldn't have come and said anything.
Oscar's earned respect, but he isn't getting ahead of himself. He knows success like Hamilton's, Verstappen's or Alonso's will only come with hard work.
I say I want to beat everybody, but the constant improvement is what's going to make me beat everybody. So focusing on that is the important part, and then hopefully the rest does what it needs to do.
Hello everyone, it's Tom Clarkson here, and welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid, the show you can listen to here on your podcast player and also watch on the F1 YouTube channel. Oscar Piastri has got to be one of the most exciting talents in the sport right now. He won the junior categories of Formula 3 and Formula 2 at the first attempt, and he held off Max Verstappen in his faster Red Bull to take that sprint win in Qatar in his very first Formula 1 season. He's up against a seriously quick teammate in Lando Norris, but Oscar's obviously got what it takes to compete at the very top. He's so measured, so thoughtful. Constant improvement is his mantra. He knows the points, podiums, and prizes will follow. And he feels he's in the right place to achieve that at McLaren, with boss Andrea Stella leading the way and former F1 winner Mark Webber as his manager. I talked to Oscar about his rookie season, clashing on track and making up off it with Lewis Hamilton, how he and Lando get on, his goals, and how his grandma's baking fuels the entire McLaren team at his home race in Melbourne. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Oscar, great to have you on the show again. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Pleased to be back at it again after...
Yes. Yeah, nice to
after
be back
quite a long
racing.
Winter. And thank you for allowing us what I call backstage. We're in
That's
your
okay.
driver's room.
Yep.
What goes on in here?
Anything and everything. naps, warming up, chilling out, crying if you need to. Everything that happens is in here.
I've always wondered, you know, when you go to the grid and then there's quite a long period now before the race starts. Do you come back to your driver's room during that time?
No. We go back to the garage and talk to some of the engineers, but they've made it shorter again this year now. So there's actually not that much time. So there's probably not going to be me sitting on TV watching a jetpack fall out of the sky again or anything like that. But no, I don't come back here in between.
Do you have any pre-race rituals that take place in here? I'm thinking, do you know what? I'm reminded of Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones. Mm. Before he goes on stage, he likes to eat a shepherd's pie. Does Oscar Piastri have any slightly weird pre-race rituals like that?
No, I don't. I mean, I do a warm-up before each race that's the same thing. Well, there's some small tweaks here and there depending on what hurts that day, but that's the only thing. Yeah, there's nothing special. I just jump in.
You just jump in and do it, right?
Jump in and do it, exactly.
Well, the last time I saw you before Bahrain was the FIA prize-giving in Baku, where you were picking up your Rookie of the Year award. So clearly it went really well for a rookie, but just how do you reflect on your first year in Formula One?
I would say there was quite a few weekends where I thought I could have done a better job. There was definitely some weekends where I left it saying I'm proud of that, and quite a few weekends in the middle where I went, well, I did some things good, some things I can do a bit better. So on the whole, I was pretty happy with it. I would say getting a rookie trophy at the end of it was nice, but I mean, it's not really why I'm in Formula One, to be honest. But yeah, I think it was a good year. I think, you know, now that I've come back for the second year, I kind of realized just how draining a Formula One season is and how much energy sort of management you need to do for yourself, and you know, taking care of yourself from that side. So I think already that's paying dividends, I hope. But no, I thought it was a good first year in F1, but certainly a long way from the ceiling of what I can do, I hope.
It does lead me to ask, you know, you say there were some things where you felt you could have done a bit better. What kind of areas are we talking about?
I think in general, there was probably two standout things. I think the consistency or lack of that I had last year was not exactly how I wanted it to be. I think I was quite up and down in a few weekends.
So you're talking weekend to weekend,
weekend to weekend. So I think just having more consistency across the year would be, it's always a positive thing. But I think that was something that I wasn't particularly happy with. And then managing the tires in a race, that was from a, you know, specifically driving point of view, that was probably the biggest focus that I took into this year and biggest thing I wanted to improve. I think my quali pace, in especially the second half of last year, was there or thereabouts most of the time, but the race pace was a bit more hit and miss. So that was something I really focused on. I think in Bahrain, it was a good step in the right direction on what is a pretty high deg circuit. You know, I felt like my tire management was decent. So that was a big focus for me, and hopefully we'll give myself a few more races to see if I've really kind of turned it around. But I think it's been a good start on that front.
Do you know, all this raises the question of just how hard it is for rookies to come into Formula One. And is it a coincidence that 2024 is the first year in history that we have no rookies because teams aren't willing to risk?
I mean, yes and no. It is very tough. I think for me, like coming to F1, you know, it's the first time I've raced against people that are, you know, so experienced in well, just in life, but in anything. In all my junior racing I did, I think the most experience somebody had was 3 years in the same category. And, you know, in my first season, Lando, who is, you know, not exactly old, you know, he already had 4 going into his 5th. So that kind of experience, especially in the world of F1, really, I think, goes a long way. And I feel like already, you know, I'm learning that. And I think everybody's at such a high level that if you get things a bit wrong, you know, everyone will pounce on you, especially the people that have that experience. They just have more experience of good and bad. And, you know, I think for me, with the limited testing that we have, you kind of have to learn things on the fly, which means having a few bad races here and there, which I definitely had. So that part is very hard. And I think trusting a rookie is not that easy. Yeah, I think, you know, McLaren took definitely, I want to hope, a calculated risk on bringing me into the team. But yeah, there's always kind of that uncertainty on, I guess, firstly, whether you're going to survive in the world of F1. It's certainly not easy. And then whether you're, you know, going to be capable and, you know, have that sort of room to develop over time as well. So I think it is very tough. I feel like more rookies maybe should be given a chance. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens to the 2025 grid. There could be a few new faces.
Oscar, I feel you were particularly raw coming in last year because you weren't racing the year before. Yeah. You didn't do any Friday practices.
Yeah.
You know, actually, in hindsight, when did you feel fully up to speed?
A week ago in Bahrain.
Are we talking mid-season?
I think even towards the end of the season. I think there was kind of two factors at play. I think probably about mid-season, I started to feel more comfortable and more confident. I think once you get a few results on the board, or even if it's not results, you know, your teammate is your best comparison. So I think if you get, you know, a few decent results against your teammate on the board, or, you know, you get close even, it boosts your confidence a bit. And then, yeah, mid-season, there was a few good results, I think.
Was that the catalyst for you feeling comfortable? Was the good results, or was it one change technically to the car, or a change in approach? Or
Not really. I mean, I always try to remove results from, you know, my mindset and my thinking, but I think especially when you've not had any and when you're so new, you sometimes need that result. And, you know, I think for me, even in my junior racing, you know, sometimes even in testing, it was like a lap in testing that I drove well, the car was good, that's what I need the car to feel like every time. Just those kind of things to anchor yourself on are very important. And I think Silverstone last year was definitely the first kind of place where I felt that genuinely. I think even here in Saudi, I qualified in the top 10 for the first time. And that was, at the time, a very big result for us and for me personally. So I gained quite a lot of confidence from that result, even just getting my first points on the board in Melbourne, even if I was quite lucky. Getting the points on the board was a nice box to tick. So I think it really started to come together more mid-season, especially after Silverstone, like I said, close to a podium. You know, I felt like that was one of my strongest weekends of the year, but that's where it took a bit of a turn for the better. But then the second half of the year, we had so many new circuits that I think we had like 7 new tracks in a row or something that I'd never been to. So what I'd gained in sort of comfort and experience with the car, I then lost again with experience of the tracks in the second half of the year. And there was a few sprint weekends thrown in there, and that made life tricky as well. So it's,
well, you were good at sprints.
Some sprints, yeah. The first few sprints were
Spa,
kind to me.
Great.
Spa was great. Qatar obviously was very good. But Austin and Brazil struggled a lot. So having that lack of experience or lack of practice time definitely ate away. And it wasn't a linear progression. You know, there was some weekends in the middle of the year that were, I thought, very strong. Some weekends towards the very end of the year that were some of my worst, I would say. So it was kind of up and down through the whole year. And part of that was probably being tired, it sounds very boring, but, you know, just getting to the end of the season, all those flyaway races, you know, that's the first time in my life I've done that much traveling and experiencing it firsthand. So,
how do you make that easier?
I mean, I think even just experiencing it the first time, you know, when you've not lived it before, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. So I think even now, having just experienced it and knowing what to expect again, you know, it puts your mind a little bit at ease of you know, you survive through it, obviously. But that's the first thing. And then you obviously try and work with the team, with your trainer, whoever it is, all of the above, to make things as easy for you as possible.
Are you going to change your travel plans this year? Or is it just an acceptance that when you first land in Vegas, you're going to feel rubbish and let the adrenaline take over?
I mean, there's always that side of things that you can't get around. You know, jet lag, you can try as hard as you like, and there are certain things you can do to help, but you're never going to fully fix it, especially when you go to Vegas and you don't see sunlight for 3 days. That really doesn't help. So those little things will get looked at, definitely, and scrutinized. You know, my sort of scheduling, commitments, all of those kind of things, my training leading up around those events, you know, trying to fit that in such a busy schedule is not easy, but necessary. So just all of those little things you kind of need to keep on top of, which, you know, maybe got a bit overwhelming.
Oscar, necessary to take a break.
Yes.
As well. I mean, did you down tools over the winter and not think about Formula One for a few weeks?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah,
I went home to Melbourne for 3 weeks, which was nice. Saw my family, saw my friends. I have to say, the winter break felt like it was very short. Bahrain came around quick. And I know I'm not the first person to say that either. So it was long enough to get a bit of a break in and just take some time to reflect as well. Last year was so different to the 2 years I had before that. The F2 season I did, we had 8 race weekends versus 22 last year in the weekend. The 2022, I didn't have any race weekends. That was definitely a very different experience in terms of all the traveling, especially all the flyaways. Yeah, that was a very new experience.
And when you were hooking up with all your old mates back in Melbourne over the winter, did it dawn on you just how different your life, age 22, is compared to their life, age 22, 23, whatever they are?
Definitely, yeah. It's kind of weird. Every time I go back home and see them, and my sisters for that matter, and, you know, pretty much everyone in my life in Australia, sometimes it can be a bit shocking, you know, how different things are, you know. Some of my friends there, I'm used to spending time with them after school or in the school holidays, and now they're like actually working and they've got jobs.
Real jobs.
So, and like even just scheduling that in as well, it's kind of like, oh, can you catch up like today or tomorrow? And it's like, oh, I've got work. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot that that exists. So it's nice to go back and see them. But there is some logistical challenges with trying to see people when you don't work a 9-to-5 job. But no, it's always nice to go back and spend that time with them. And yeah, you know, just spend time with old friends and not think about F1.
If you listened to our episode with Sergio Perez at the start of the season, you'll know that I've been waiting for a package to arrive on my doorstep. And guess what was waiting for me when I got back from the Saudi Grand Prix? That's right, it was my Indochino delivery. Indochino makes fully customized suits that don't require a trip to the tailor to get that perfect fit. With Indochino, you've got the option to measure yourself at home or visit a showroom where they'll do it for you and get your hands on one of their stylish custom suits starting at just $399. All their suits are made from high-quality wools, linen and cotton in a variety of different colours and patterns. And I used Indochino online to set up my personalised measurements profile for one of their Haley cotton stretch shirts. And I've already opened the shirt and tried it on, and of course it fits perfectly, and it will make its first race weekend appearance in Melbourne this coming weekend. I'll be the guy in the perfectly tailored blue shirt. The website is so incredibly thorough when you're placing an order. It walks you through every single measurement you'll need, which only takes about 10 minutes in total. And when it comes to customization, they've thought about everything from the length to the buttons, the collar and the pockets. And I loved that you even had the option to select what style cuff you wanted to go for. It's these little details that make all the difference. So level up your game with Indochino. Go to Indochino.com and use the code GRID to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's 10% off at Indochino.com with the code GRID.
Oscar Piastri is on his way to victory in Formula One in his rookie season at his 17th Grand Prix weekend. Oscar Piastri has done the job brilliantly. The Australian driver will see the checkered flag first. Oscar Piastri wins the sprint to take McLaren to the top step once again.
I did just want to ask you about the sprint in Qatar. Of course, yes. You won the race. And one of the things, apart from your speed, obviously, that really stood out for me last year was your coolness.
Mm.
Ice cool, sort of Raikkonen-esque, I feel. I want to ask you what it was like. You're leading that race. Max Verstappen is bearing down on you. What were you thinking at that moment?
A few things. I think the first thing was I knew there wasn't that long left in the sprint. I think it was like 5 laps left or 6 laps left. And the gap was like, I want to say 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds. So I knew it was going to be pretty tight. At that point, I was kind of like, you know, how quickly is he going to catch me? And like, how hard am I going to have to fight? But then after like the first lap, he got into second. And then the second lap, he didn't take that much out of me. I think even the second lap, we were pretty much even. So from that point onwards, I was actually quite confident that we could win. And then from that point, it was a very long, like 2 or 3 laps trying to get to the end. But yeah, I was honestly quite relaxed. But those first couple of laps, it was quite the opposite. Just knowing, you know, I've been in that position, fortunately, a couple of times in my career already. And it's an interesting feeling when you've got a quicker car behind you. But yeah, that time we had enough to hang on, which was cool.
You know, we've referenced race management already. Explain for us mere mortals who have never driven a Formula One car, is there anything you can do to prepare your arsenal for the attack from someone like Max Verstappen in terms of looking after your tyres? Were you driving differently before he got up behind you? Is there anything you can do with all the systems in the car that...
To a very limited extent, yes. You can do some things. You can look after the tyres a little bit better. You know, you can charge the battery up if you want. Both of those things come at a cost of lap time, right? So if you want to charge the battery up fully for when he gets to you, he's going to get to you even quicker. If you want to look after the tyres for when he gets to you, he's going to catch you even quicker. So there's almost an element of, do I push flat out and just try and hang on, which is kind of what I did, or do you just wait for the attack to come? But when you've got a quicker car behind you like that, especially the Red Bull that has a very powerful DRS and top-end speed, there's not that much you can do to stop it. It's almost, you know, prevention is the best, you know, the best way to attack it rather than waiting for it to happen and trying to fight it. So that was kind of the mentality I had. And yeah, fortunately it worked.
And how did it feel? How do you reflect on that win? It's not going to go down in history as a Grand Prix win.
Unfortunately not, no.
But how important was it?
I think at the time I didn't really appreciate it that much.
Really?
Yeah, honestly. Like we had the Grand Prix the next day. I think I was actually more excited to qualify on pole than crossing the line first for the sprint. The sprint shootout was basically the same as qualifying, just had a different name. So, you know, when you beat everyone else on merit, you know, I feel like there's in some racing situations, even the sprint to some extent, you know, a few guys got through on softs and, you know, Max got put back in the pack a little bit. A few things went my way a little bit. I still did my job of getting back to the front, but there's those kind of variables. In qualifying, it's you, the track, and whoever's the quickest, that's who wins, right? So I was very happy about that part of the weekend. The sprint, I was certainly happy with, but I then knew I had the Grand Prix the next day. So I don't think it was till after that weekend and like probably even into the off season where I went, okay, that's pretty cool. Like I was one of two guys or three guys to beat Max for the whole year, one of the two non-Red Bull winners, even if it wasn't in a Grand Prix. So in hindsight, a very, very cool achievement and, you know, something I'm very proud of. But at the moment, honestly, you know, even asking my engineers, I think they're expecting a bit more from me. So, yeah, it didn't sink in immediately.
And Max, damn it, did steal the headlines that night, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bit selfish.
He couldn't have waited the next day to win the world championship. Like, I think Lando actually said it stole my thunder a little bit. But I was okay with that. I was happy with the win anyway.
Look, what about Lando? You seem to rub along, at least from the outside, very well together. Is that the reality?
Yeah, I would say so. We certainly work well together. You know, I think we're always pushing each other to be quicker and quicker, you know, which is what you want as teammates.
Is it a completely open door policy here at McLaren?
Yeah.
Everything on his car you can see and he can see on your car. And
yeah, I mean, sometimes we ask each other questions about, know, how we're driving or what we felt and stuff like that.
Oh, come on. Is it tempting?
To what? To say something that's not true? No, of course not.
Problem is the data doesn't hide anything.
Yeah, exactly. The data doesn't lie. So, yeah, I mean, we share, you know, everything from that side of things. So, I think we work together really well. And I think last year, you know, I'm certainly not going to take credit for the turnaround that we had, but I like to think that the way that me and Lando worked together, you know, helped boost everyone in the team a bit. And we've always had very similar feedback on what we want from the car. So I think from an engineering point of view, that makes life a bit simpler for the engineers, especially if they're at a bit of a crossroads of, you know, two different paths. It's nice to have the same or roughly the same feedback. So from that side of things, I think we've always gotten along well and worked together. I think outside of that, we always get to know each other better and better with more time. So, yeah, I feel like we get along well.
And when you look at his data, where is he particularly strong?
Good question. I mean, it's not just one specific area or specific thing. I would say the biggest thing is that he's always there. And, you know, even if there are mistakes, he's very good at minimizing, you know, the amount of time you lose from that, I would say. So there's not one particular thing that, you know, I clearly go, he's mega here or bad here. It, you know, chops and changes each weekend kind of thing. But he's obviously very quick.
And your team boss, Andrea Stella, when he came on the podcast, I felt like I was being given a lesson in how to go motor racing. Because he just was so articulate. The passion was obvious, but also I found myself just agreeing with everything he was saying. It's, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Does that help you?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think Andre has been incredible for the team, for, you know, not just for me, but for everyone at McLaren, like all 1,000 people, literally. So you touch on his articulate language. Sometimes he says stuff that I kind of go, do I even remember what that word means? So it's very impressive. I mean, he's very impressive in general. And I think you know, the culture that he's built in the team.
Sorry to interrupt, but how would you describe that culture at McLaren?
First and foremost, performance driven. There's no stone left unturned. We all try to get performance from everywhere, and Andrea is very much a driver of that. But I mean, just in every way, you know, from a motivation standpoint, it's pretty incredible the leadership he's able to show. And sometimes even just keeping it simple, you know, just having clear goals with what we want to do, not overcomplicating things and staying sort of true to the goal. That's the one of the biggest things. We could do like a whole series on Andrea, but I'm very happy that he's leading our team.
You talk about goals. Let's talk about 2024 now. What are they? What are the goals?
I think for me, if I can keep working on the things that I want to improve from last year, that is the ultimately the biggest thing. I think trying to aim for podiums or wins or points, whatever it might be, it's not very productive, I don't think. Bahrain, for example, we didn't have a car that could win. So if I had to set my sights on trying to win the race and I finished eighth, I'm only going to leave disappointed there. So, you know, on the flip side, I went into that race wanting to work on how I manage the tyres and be able to look after them and, you know, not dig off massively. And that I feel like I achieved pretty well. So those two different perspectives for the same finishing result completely changed the way you think about it. So I left that race feeling very happy. And if I can keep doing those kind of things, regardless of where we finish, of course, if you get a trophy at the end of the day, it always makes you feel a bit better. But I think knowing that I've improved or done a good job, that's by far the most important thing. And then if as a team we're in a position to score a podium or hopefully eventually score a win, then of course you want to try and do that as well.
I feel Suzuka might be the acid test for this car because clearly you go incredibly well there in your first visit last year, you know, front row and everything. Do you feel that? Are you going to enter the Japanese Grand Prix going, okay, we're going to find out where this car is relative to last year, really?
I think Suzuka, again, will be, like I said, a good test. It's got a bit of everything. The tarmac is quite unique, almost in some ways a bit like Bahrain, or certainly it was last year. A lot of high-speed corners, but again, some very slow corners, which in the past haven't been our friend. So if we can be quick around there, I think that would be a good test. But yeah, to challenge Red Bull, even on some of these different circuits, I think is still going to be very tough.
Take Red Bull out of the equation. It seems the field has closed up yet again. In Bahrain, you had Lewis Hamilton in front of you, Fernando Alonso behind you, two of the most experienced guys in Formula One. Do you relish racing these people?
Yes and no. I mean, when you're in the car, no. Like, they're just another person you're trying to beat, really. But, I mean, yeah, when you don't have the helmet on, yeah, I mean, it means a little bit more when you're racing against, you know, someone like Fernando or Lewis, just because of the history that they have and the success they've had in the sport. So it is pretty cool, definitely. But when you're on track, honestly, they're all the same.
In terms of wheel-to-wheel combat, are they doing different things to other people?
I mean, I've crashed with Lewis a couple of times, so yeah, and I feel like both of them weren't particularly my fault, but I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't like me. But I mean, not massively different. You know, you kind of know, you know, with that much experience, you know that they're, you know, they're going to put the car in the right place. The strategy that they're going to work with their team is going to be good. So, you know, from that side of things, it's always going to be, got to be on your A game, trying to beat them. There's also kind of the mentality of, you know, you can't treat them any differently and you can't have that that prejudice, because then you're going to race them different. You might race them a bit softer, you might race them a bit harder, both of which can be bad. So you kind of just have to treat them as somebody else. And I think now that I've been in F1 for a year, it's much easier to do that. Certainly, I think Saudi here last year, I think I lined up alongside Lewis on the grid. And I remember someone showed me the start graphic after the race. And I was like, damn, I'm in my second F1 race alongside Lewis Hamilton. Last year, I was watching him line up on the grid. And now I'm sitting alongside, I'm like, that's pretty damn cool.
And when you do have an incident, let's call it that, with someone like Lewis, do you talk about it afterwards? Or is that not how you guys roll?
Yeah, no, the couple of times Lewis and I have had incidents, he's been very good. I mean, the one in Monza, he came up to me straight away and shook my hand and said sorry, which, you know, you don't get from everyone on the grid. The one in Vegas was a bit of a 50-50, but we spoke about it we certainly weren't angry or pissed off at each other. We just sort of spoke about it and, you know, what we were trying to do and why it went wrong and stuff. So, yeah, from that side of things, it's been cool to talk to, and you certainly don't get that kind of respect or discussion with other people.
And when you think that they've done more than 300 Grand Prix, that's a level of respect as well, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean,
can you imagine yourself doing that?
To a rookie? I don't know. But I actually had, I think it was Mark actually, who said to me after Monza, if he didn't think much of you, he wouldn't have come and said anything, which I'm going to trust Mark on that one. I feel like that's a good bit of advice or wisdom, but yeah, that's a long time. And, you know, Lewis has not had that many incidents in his life, so could be easy for him just to brush it off. But I had a lot of respect. You know, of course I wish that we didn't crash in the first place, but I had a lot of respect for, you know, being like that.
You mentioned Mark Webber, of course, your manager. That's one example of how he's helped you, I guess. Give us some other examples of how useful it is to have him as your wingman and the kind of advice he can give you.
Ooh, where to start? It's so many areas. I mean, the first one is just the behind the scenes stuff, all the paperwork, sorting out schedules, just making my life as simple as possible.
But anyone could do that for you, right?
Anyone could do that, but Mark has lived it through my shoes before. So he knows that if I have to go into the weekend with distractions from something else in whatever's going on, he knows the impact that that's going to have because he's been there himself. So having somebody that's been a driver themselves, had a long career, had a successful career, that in so many areas is incredibly helpful. So that side of things is very important. Even from a team point of view, you know, he's been in a championship winning team in F1, in WEC, in sports cars before that. So even just kind of the mindset and mentality he brings from that side of things is very insightful and very useful. And, you know, even still now, he comes up with questions for me that I haven't even thought about sometimes. So he definitely is just as sharp as ever. And from a driving point of things, he's trying to help me or, you know, in some cases, point out where I'm going wrong or whether I can do something different or better. So it's just so many areas that he's, invaluable for.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp. Have you thought about what you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Would you finally have time to curl up with that book you've been meaning to finish for months? Would you lace up your running shoes and hit the gym? Or start that online writing class? Or schedule some time to catch up with an old friend or family member that you know could use a little bit extra support? It's a question that often goes unanswered as we navigate the chaos of everyday life, because we probably all feel like we could use a little more time to ourselves. The problem is knowing how to spend it in a way that enriches your life. And that's where therapy can help. You might not realize it, but therapy isn't just for people dealing with major trauma or crises. It's about discovering what makes you happy and making those things a priority. It provides a safe space to explore your values, set boundaries, and learn positive coping skills. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. Spend more time focusing on the things you love and unlock the possibilities of a more fulfilling life. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/grid. That's betterhelp.com/grid.
Well, let's throw it forward to the home GP. For those people watching on YouTube, we can see Oscar's helmet in the background. I believe it's going to look different for Melbourne. Is that right?
It is going to look different for Melbourne.
Can you give us an exclusive? What's it going to look like?
Take that helmet and, I mean, apart from the sponsors...
It's going to be very different.
It's going to be very different. Cool. So it, I've seen it. It looks, I think it looks really cool. So, so yeah, I'm looking forward to showing it.
You scored your first ever points in that race last year. What would it mean to finish on the podium at home in the park where you used to play when you were a kid?
It would mean a lot, definitely. I mean, we've had, I think Albert Park's had one unofficial or temporary podium before Daniel got disqualified in 2014.
And of course, Mark got on the podium.
Mark got on the podium, but, but he didn't finish on the podium.
That was back in 2002 when he finished fifth. But.
It would mean a lot. And I think, you know, if there's one race on the calendar that you want to do well at, it's always your home race. So, yeah, of course, I would love to get on the podium there. We'll see if we're competitive enough to do that. But if we are, then, I mean, even if we're not, I'll be doing my best to try and make it happen.
And the family's coming?
Yes. Everyone will be there, which is cool.
Is your grandma going to be there with her Lamingtons?
With her Lamingtons and rum balls, probably,
yes. Can you explain for non-Aussies what a Lamington is?
So a Lamington is kind of like a, I want to say it's like sponge cake kind of. And it depends a bit on the Lamington, but it's like sponge cake with a bit of jam in the middle. And then it's rolled in cocoa or like... something, so it's, but it sticks to the sponge, and then it's rolled in coconut, so it's very nice.
And she delivered for the whole team.
Yeah, so that was a different thing. She delivered. They're called rum balls.
Okay, what's
so
that?
It's a specific type of biscuit. I forget what type of biscuit. But you crush it up, mix it with condensed milk and cocoa powder. You make it into a ball. If you're an adult, you put rum in it. My grandma's never put rum in it because, I mean, they were a childhood treat, so responsible. But I personally think they're better than Lamingtons. So she made a bunch of them. She made like hundreds of them for the team, and they were all gone within about half an
and
hour.
And how's the production process going? Is she on
I
it?
Haven't checked in. I should, but I'm sure they'll be there in bulk.
And you have some of the Aussie cricket team turning up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nathan Lyon, Usman Khawaja and Alex Carey, am I right?
I think so. I need to double check. But yeah, there's definitely some of them coming, which is very cool.
And it reminds me of when you were in the Nets last summer during the Ashes series.
Yeah.
And looking pretty tidy with the bat. I've got to give it to you, Oscar.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, that was probably the best I've ever batted in my life.
You look very relaxed.
I had a few good ones. I mean, Nathan Lyon was bowling very slowly to me.
Yeah, but he was putting a lot of spin on it.
I'm sure he could have tried more. But I also didn't have a box in, so he was...
So you were wearing jeans, actually, and anyone who's played cricket will think, how's that working with the box? I did actually think that
so I didn't
myself.
Have a box. I mean, I didn't have any kit with me, so I wore Nathan Lyon's actual match kit, which was quite cool. A bit sweaty, admittedly, but...
I don't want to wear his box.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So yeah, he was taking it easy on me, but... That was honestly probably the best I've ever hit a cricket ball as well. So, I won't be taking on that challenge anytime soon again.
But clearly from seeing that footage, and do have a look on YouTube, everybody listening, if you want to see Oscar hitting a cricket ball very cleanly. But your hand-eye coordination is clearly very good. You're a racing driver, and I saw that in the Nets as well. So I'm giving you this opportunity to say something to Alex Albon, who has publicly... Oscar, he's publicly shamed you.
Here we go, you're giving him my chance, Tom.
He's publicly shamed you about your paddle playing.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It's absolute nonsense. Absolute rubbish. I will admit, I'm not the best. I've played against some people that are good, but I'm certainly not the worst. Yeah, it's getting personal now. I saw they did another video today as of when we're recording.
He's done it again.
Yeah, they've put my face on a paddle racket. I mean, I haven't seen the video yet, but this is not finished. So I think it's going to probably end up in a McLaren versus Williams paddle game.
Can I be there to witness that?
Yes, you can. We might sell tickets and everything. But yeah, this is not over. But I'm not taking it because I'm definitely not the worst. Nowhere near.
Well, look, Oscar, I did want to end this just by saying, if we hook up at the end of the year, season's just gone. We've done 24 races. We're both probably pretty shattered. You way more than me, obviously. What would be a good year for Oscar Piastri? You say constant improvement. Mm-hmm. Will that be enough as long as you know you've done a good job and you're not going to put a number on it?
I think yes. I mean, I think putting an absolute number on it is not particularly productive, like I said. I mean, as much as we try to not say it, I guess, your teammate is always your best reference. So, you know, naturally, how I stack up against Lando, you know, especially externally, is what's going to be looked at. But also, I want to beat everybody, which includes Lando. So, you know, I want to be able to try and do that. There's certainly some things that I need to improve on that will take time, but I'm here because I want to try and win. That's going to be a good measure, I guess. But yeah, just the constant improvement is the biggest thing. And I say I want to beat everybody, but the constant improvement is what's going to make me beat everybody. So focusing on that is the important part. And then hopefully the rest does what it needs to do.
Well, look, very good luck with that. We're just going to end on a new segment that we have for this
week. Wow,
yeah. Quick fire questions. Mm. First one, what else are you good at?
Paddle. Thank you, Alex Albon. What else am I good at? I like to think I'm not a terrible cook, actually.
Lamingtons?
I can't cook Lamingtons, no. But no, I'm not a good cook. I'm okay. I can get by. What else am I good at? I feel like you should ask everyone this Oscar, question.
This is really funny. I am. And this is the most difficult question for anyone to ask.
By far. I mean, we spend so much time trying to be good at driving race cars that we don't have that much time for anything else. I want to say that, let's say, in the F1 field, I reckon I can back myself as the best cricketer. I'm okay at cricket. That's as far as I can get.
All right. Look, next one. Which racing driver, dead or alive, would you want to be stuck in a lift with?
I mean, someone who can fix the lift, ideally. That would be good.
You're very practical. You're the first person to say that.
Yeah. I mean, probably Senna. I've spoken to Alan Prost before, so I think he's out of the running because I've already spoken. Probably Senna. I think Jackie Stewart would be. I mean, I've spoken to Jackie as well. And you could be stuck in a lift for a very long time and not run out of conversation with Jackie.
What is it about Senna?
Firstly, how quick he was, the sort of style that he had as well, but also like just the way he went about racing and like trying to improve the sport as well. Yeah, I think that's kind of why I'd want to be stuck with Jackie as well. You know, the way he was, of course, successful, but improved the sport, you know, to in some ways what it is today. That would be very cool to learn about.
I see you as more Prost than Senna.
I've had that before.
Maybe that's why you want to get stuck in a lift with Ed.
Maybe, yeah. I mean,
see the other
side. I've also met Alan and spoken to him at good length a few times. So I'll go with Senna just to see what he was like.
Who would play you in a film?
I don't know enough actors. Let's go Brad Pitt.
Of course, right? Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise, right?
Exactly, one of the two.
All right. Who is the coolest person in your address book?
As in, like, in my phone? Or
yes, sorry, you probably don't talk about an address book. No. Sorry, I'm showing my age. Yes, yes, that.
In my contacts list.
Yes.
Okay.
Rephrase the question next time, Tom. Yeah.
Coolest person in my contact list. I mean, probably Alan Prost. I feel like that's a pretty cool person to have the phone number of.
Agreed. Final one, who would be your first guest if you hosted a podcast?
As in from the grid or... It
can be anyone.
Anyone. Anyone. Alex Albon, so we could have a paddle match and settle it once and for all.
No, but that needs to be on video.
True, true. A podcast.
Sports star. Politician. Explorer.
Michael Jordan.
Why?
first thing, what he had to do to become that successful, what it was like being that successful, and like, how do you deal with being the most famous person in the world? Like, that was, I mean, I have a very minor appreciation for what it might have been like, but that was, from some of the stuff I've watched in The Last Dance, that was next level stuff. So, yeah. Like, no one can teach you about how to deal with that. So, yeah, that's probably a question I'd ask.
How have you found the fame thing?
It's been cool, definitely.
You're still at the cool stage.
I'm still at the cool stage, yeah. The hardest part is saying no, because like, you don't want to let anyone down or say no to signing something or taking photos, but it does get to a point where like, I have to go do things and do my job or whatever it might be. Like, that's honestly the hardest part about it.
Do you know what? It's going to take you a long time to get down the Melbourne Walk next week.
Oh, don't worry. I know.
Arrive early.
I know. I will. I think I timed one last year or maybe the year before. I think it took me half an hour to walk. I don't know how long it is, but it's like
50 meters.
Yeah, 100 tops. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I will be there bright and early.
Well, Oscar, good luck in Melbourne. Good luck for the rest of the year. And, yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Everyone is going to want a slice of Oscar in Melbourne this weekend. That is for sure. I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did. Oscar is so calm and composed, isn't he? He seems almost bulletproof. It'll be fascinating to see how he improves as the year goes on. Oscar, thanks for your time. It was great to have you on the show again. So that's been two Stars of the Future on consecutive episodes because Alex Albon was my guest on Beyond the Grid last week. And you loved hearing from Alex. Tommy Sandy got in touch and he summed it up well with this. Albon has to be one of, if not, the most friendly and genuine drivers on the grid. I've always admired him for that, and it's always a pleasure to hear him speak. Hear, hear, Tommy, well said. And please remember to send in your thoughts and stories about Oscar Piastri. We love your messages and we read them all. And if you want more Oscar, as I said in the introduction, you can watch our interview on the F1 YouTube channel, and we get a sneak peek at his driver room, which is where we recorded the chat. He's also been telling our sister F1 Explains podcast about how his time in Formula 2 and Formula 3 prepared him for Formula 1, and I'm sure you'll agree now, after listening to Beyond the Grid, that anything with Oscar in it is worth a listen. Well, that's almost it from me for this week. One last plug, if you want to visit a Grand Prix this year, you can book your seats at tickets.formula1.com. I can't guarantee that you'll get cakes from Oscar's grandma, but I can tell you that you will get the best tickets, the best experience, and the best hospitality options. And why not check out F1.com or the app for all the latest Formula One news, including the all-new column from Günther Steiner. I'll of course be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One, but thank you for listening. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.